Okay, so we've got this trademark case, Coach, like the handbag company, going up against Triumph Flirting. It's a little wild, right? Both wanting to use the word coach, which seems, I don't know, pretty basic. And I was surprised by the outcome. Like, you'd think Coach, the luxury giant, would just, I don't know, automatically win.
Yeah, you'd think.
But nope, it went to court, and things got really complicated. We've got a bunch of articles and legal briefs about all this. And honestly, going through it all really makes you think about how trademarks work.
Absolutely. Yeah, this case really gets into some of the trickier aspects, especially when you're dealing with those descriptive marks.
Right. So what's the deal here? Like, why didn't Coach just win right out of the gate?
Well, it's interesting. The courts didn't just side with Coach because they're, the bigger, more famous brand.
Right. That was my first thought too. I mean, Coach, those bags are iconic. They've been around forever. And then you've got Triumph Learning. They're, in the education world, they've been using Coach for their like study guides and stuff since the 80s.
So it does seem, a little bit like David and Goliath.
Totally.
But the courts really dug in, they looked at the evidence, applied all these legal tests they use for trademark infringement, and things got pretty complex.
So break it down for me. What were the big arguments that each side was making? Because like I said, it's literally the same word. I'm still kind of confused how this even went to court.
Well, Coach, or legally they're actually CSI, argued that Triumph Learning using Coach was going to cause confusion in the market and dilute their brand. They were basically like, hey, we've been Coach, the luxury brand, for ages, and now this educational company is going to mess that all up.
Okay, yeah, I can kind of see that. Even if the products are totally different, having the same name out there, it could, I don't know, make things blurry for people. So what did Coach have to back that up? Like, did they actually show people were getting confused? Like, were there people walking into Coach stores asking for like SAT prep books?
That's where it gets interesting. So both companies have been using Coach for a long time.
Right.
Decades, really. But there wasn't actually any evidence of actual confusion. Nobody was like ending up in the wrong place or anything.
Huh. So that kind of weakens Coach's argument right there.
Okay.
Okay, but what about I think they call it dilution. Didn't Coach say that having someone else using Coach, even for something totally different, would like water down their brand and make it less exclusive?
Yeah, they did.
Did that go anywhere?
Well, here's the thing about dilution.
Okay.
You need to show that your mark is not just well known, like in your specific industry, but actually famous. Like everybody knows it. Think Kleenex or Band-Aids. Those brands that basically become the word for the product itself.
Oh, okay. So Coach isn't just like a big name in fashion. It needs to be something everyone knows, right?
Exactly. And that's where Coach ran into a little bit of a problem. Most of their evidence focused on how famous they are, to people who buy luxury goods, but that's a specific group. They didn't really show that the average person would hear Coach and automatically think of those handbags.
Huh, intriguing.
And get this, they tried to use their annual reports to prove their brand's fame, but the court was like, nope, not gonna work.
Wait, why? What's wrong with annual reports?
Well, legally, the court said they were hearsay, meaning they weren't reliable enough to be used as proof in this case.
Oh, wow. Okay. So even if it's an official company document, it doesn't automatically mean it's going to fly in court.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay, so we've got no confused customers, and their proof of fame wasn't strong enough. I'm starting to see why this wasn't an easy win for Coach. But there was something else too, right? About what was it called? Acquired distinctiveness.
That's where it gets even more interesting, and it really shows how tricky it is to use descriptive terms as trademarks.
Okay, so remind me, descriptive marks, those are just words that like literally describe the thing.
Yeah, exactly. So like Coach literally describes someone who gives guidance or teaches something.
Right, yeah.
And that was CSI's argument. They were like, look, Coach, in education, it's just descriptive. It's not unique to Triumph Learning. But here's the catch.
Right.
Even descriptive marks can become protected trademarks if they acquire what's called secondary meaning.
Secondary meaning. Okay, so that's where a word takes on a new meaning beyond like its dictionary definition. And people start to associate it with a specific brand. Like Apple isn't just a fruit anymore.
Exactly. You got it. That's secondary meaning in action.
Okay, cool. So for Triumph Learning to win, they'd have to prove that when someone sees Coach on like a test prep book, they don't just think of a tutor or, a coach in general. They think specifically of Triumph Learning.
Precisely. they had to show they built a separate identity for their brand, even though there's, you know, all these other coach things out there. And that that's where things got tricky for them.
So did they manage to do that? Did they convince the court that coach meant Triumph Learning?
Well, at first, the initial ruling actually went in Triumph Learning's favor.
Oh, wow.
But then the Federal Circuit Court, they stepped in and said, not so fast. They sent that part of the case back for another look, basically saying, we need more information before we can decide if Coach really has become the same thing as Triumph Learning's materials.
So even though the first court was like, yeah, you're good, the Federal Circuit wasn't convinced. Why did they pump the brakes like that?
There are a couple of key things they had issues with.
Okay.
First, they said the court didn't properly look at all the evidence of other companies using Coach in education.
So, like, other companies also using Coach for, like, tutoring or whatever. So Triumph Learning wasn't the only one.
Exactly. And that makes their argument weaker.
Right. Because if everyone's using the same word, it's harder to say you've got something unique.
Right. The Federal Circuit wanted the court to really look at how much other companies were using Coach and how similar it was to what Triumph Learning was doing. Like, were those other uses really widespread or just a couple random things?
Okay.
And were they similar enough to Triumph Learning to actually cause confusion?
So basically, did Triumph Learning really stand out from all the other Coach stuff out there?
Yeah, exactly.
Makes sense. Yeah. What was the other issue?
The second problem was with the sales data Triumph Learning used.
Uh-huh.
They were trying to show how long and how much they'd been using Coach by, you know, pointing to their sales. But the Federal Circuit basically said, we need more proof that these numbers are actually accurate.
Oh, so they couldn't just, like, throw out some numbers and expect everyone to believe them.
Right. They needed more concrete proof, like actual invoices. You know, sales records, advertising spending, that kind of thing. Something to really back up those sales figures and show how consistently they'd been using the Coach mark.
So, like, a paper trail, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. So the case is on hold until they sort out all this stuff about, like, other people using Coach and prove those sales numbers are legit.
Exactly. And that's where we'll pick up in part two. We'll get into all the details about acquired distinctiveness, what kind of evidence you need to convince a court that a descriptive term is really a unique brand. You know, this whole thing with Coach and Triumph Learning really makes you think about, like, where's the line, you know, between protecting a trademark that a company has worked hard to build.
Right.
And being fair, letting people use words that just, you know, describe what they do.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's like you want to reward companies for making a brand that people recognize, but you also don't want them, like, hogging all the good words.
Especially words that are important in a certain industry, right? Exactly. And the courts, they're always trying to figure that out, like how to balance those two things. I mean, think about it. Coach is a pretty common word.
Right.
You hear it in sports, you know, self-help stuff all over the place.
Totally. And for Triumph Learning and education company, it makes perfect sense. They're literally coaching students, helping them do well on tests.
Right. Exactly. And that's why this whole idea of acquire distinctiveness, it's so important.
Mm-hmm.
It basically means a descriptive word can become a trademark.
Okay.
But only if the company can show that they've used it consistently and built up that recognition. But it's not easy, especially with a word like coach that everyone already uses.
So it's not just about who used it first. It's about how they used it and whether they really stood out, right?
Yeah, you got it. It all comes down to, like, that connection in the customer's mind.
Okay.
Between the word and the specific company behind it.
Right.
And that can be tough to do.
Right. So the Federal Circuit sent this case back to the lower court to look at this acquired distinctiveness thing more closely. What did they want them to do differently? It sounds like they weren't totally buying what Triumph Learning was saying.
Right. The Federal Circuit basically gave the lower court, like, a more detailed set of instructions for how to look at the evidence. Remember, we talked about those third party uses of Coach.
Yeah.
You know, other companies using the word in the education world.
Yeah, the Federal Circuit seemed kind of concerned about that.
Mm-hmm. They basically said, hey, look closer at all these other companies using Coach and really analyze, like, how similar are they to what Triumph Learning is doing? If there are a bunch of companies using Coach in pretty much the same way, it makes it harder for Triumph Learning to say that they've created a unique brand.
Right. It's like, if everyone's wearing the same outfit, how do you stand out?
Yeah, exactly. Were there specific examples?
Yeah. Were there any specific companies using Coach that the Federal Circuit was like, oh, this seems like a problem?
Yeah, there were a few. One that really stood out was this company called Coach, Inc. They do tutoring services, and get this, they use the slogan, "We coach potential."
Wow, that's super close to what Triumph Learning does.
Right, and that's exactly why the Federal Circuit called it out. They wanted the court to really think about whether this and other similar uses were enough to hurt Triumph Learning's case.
So if there are all these other coaches out there, how is anyone supposed to know which one is which? It seems like it would be easy to get confused.
Exactly. And that's the tough part for Triumph Learning. They need to show that they've done enough to be different, even with all those other coach companies out there.
Okay, so that's the third-party use issue. What about that problem with the sales data? What did the Federal Circuit want the court to do about that?
Remember, Triumph Learning was trying to use their sales figures to show how long and how much they'd been using Coach. But the Federal Circuit was like, hold on, you need more than just numbers.
Yeah.
You got to prove these numbers are actually right, that they're coming from a reliable source.
So they couldn't just be like, look, we made this much money, so obviously people know this is Coach.
Nope, not at all. They needed to back it up with solid proof. Things like, you know, actual invoices, those sales records we talked about, proof of their advertising spending, basically a trail of documents that proves what they're saying is true and shows that they've been consistently using the Coach mark in a way that supports their pace.
Okay, so really detailed documentation is key here. It all goes back to what we were talking about before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Building a brand takes time and effort. You can't just put a name on something and expect everyone to recognize it right away.
You got it. It takes consistent use, smart marketing, and creating something that customers have a good experience with. All those things help build a brand that people remember.
Right. So the court has a lot to look at. They need to go back and really examine all those other companies using Coach. Take a harder look at those sales numbers from Triumph Learning. And then, in the end, they'll have to decide if, in the world of education, Coach really means Triumph Learning.
It's a tough one. And this case really shows how complicated trademarks can be, especially when you're dealing with these descriptive words.
So we're back, and I'm still thinking about this whole acquired distinctiveness thing.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like even if a company has been using a descriptive word for ages, that doesn't automatically mean they get to, you know, trademark it.
Yeah, that's right. It's not a slam dunk. It's a really specific area of trademark law. Companies have to go beyond just, like, using the word a lot. They have to show that customers actually connect that word with their specific brand, not just the general thing it describes.
So for Triumph Learning, they can't just put Coach on a textbook and be like, well, we've been doing that forever, so it's ours now.
Exactly. They've got to convince the court that when consumers see Coach on something educational, they immediately think Triumph Learning, not just any tutor or, you know, coaching program.
It's like if I tried to trademark the word Apple. Like, everyone knows what an apple is, right? So I'd have to work really hard to make people think that apple, in my world, means something totally different and specific to my company.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And that's exactly the situation Triumph Learning is in. They've got to present a really strong case showing that Coach, in the education world, equals Triumph Learning.
Okay, so how do they even prove that? What kind of evidence would really convince the court?
Well, one thing that's really powerful is direct customer testimony. Like, imagine having actual customers go up there and say, when I see Coach on a test prep book, I instantly think Triumph Learning.
So, like, people actually confirming that they make that connection. That seems pretty persuasive, but I bet it's hard to get people to do that.
It is, yeah. You'd need a lot of those statements to really make a difference. Another way to go is using surveys, where you ask people specific questions about what brands come to mind.
So, like, when you see Coach used for educational stuff, what company do you think of?
Exactly. And if the survey is done right, and it shows that a lot of people link the word to a specific brand, that can be really strong evidence. Of course, surveys can be complicated. There are rules about how to do them, so they're fair and accurate.
Okay, so besides surveys and people's statements, what else can companies use to prove this acquired distinctiveness?
Oh, there are other things. Like advertising and marketing materials. Those can show how a company has been using the word to build recognition. If they've spent a lot of money on campaigns that connect Coach specifically to their brand, that shows they were really trying to create a separate identity.
So it's not just about how long they've been using the word, it's about how actively they've been promoting it, right?
Right. What about sales figures or media coverage?
Yeah. Can those be used as evidence?
Yeah, they can. Sales data, information about how much of the market they have, even news articles that talk about the brand using the word, all of those things help build a picture of how people see the word in the real world. The more a company can show that the word means their brand to customers, the stronger their case is.
So it sounds like it takes a lot of different pieces to prove this. You need more than just using the word casually. It's like putting together a puzzle to show that the word has taken on a whole new meaning in the marketplace.
You got it. And that's what makes this case so interesting. It really highlights all the ins and outs of acquired distinctiveness, and it shows the challenges companies face when they're trying to claim rights to a descriptive word. It's not as easy as just being the first one to use it. You have to show that you've taken that word and made it into something that really represents your brand in a unique way.
This whole deep dive has been really eye-opening. We've learned so much about how trademarks work, how important evidence is in these legal fights, and how much strategy goes into making a brand strong. So as we wrap things up, what are some key things our listeners should remember, especially if they're thinking about using a descriptive word as their trademark?
I think the biggest takeaway here is to be proactive. If you're using a descriptive word, don't wait until you're in court to start worrying about acquired distinctiveness. Build your case right from the beginning.
So keep good records, track your marketing, get those customer statements, and be ready to show how you've made that word your own.
Exactly. And if you're choosing a new trademark, do your homework. Make sure nobody else is already using it in a similar field. And if you do go with a descriptive word, be prepared to work extra hard to make it stand out.
This has been a fascinating look into the world of trademarks. It's a good reminder that even the simplest words can get really complicated when you're talking about brand identity and legal protection. We've seen how a case like Coach versus Triumph Learning, which seems pretty straightforward at first, can uncover all sorts of legal issues and strategic decisions. And in the end, we're left wondering, will Coach, in the world of education, become recognized as a unique brand? Or will it stay a common word that anyone can use? This case really makes you think about how language is always changing, and the meaning of words can shift depending on how and where they're used. It's up to brands to shape that meaning and create a connection that sticks with customers.